Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters Show with your host, Joel Zeslavsky. Are you ready to be showered with virtual hugs? I don't even know if that's possible, but today I'm going to try. This is episode number 34. Buenos, ding dong, diddly, dias, tardes, or noches, you groovy listener, you. That's Flanderino, originated by Ned Flanders from The Simpsons fame for good morning, afternoon, or evening. I really appreciate you cranking up the audio player once again to hear what I have in store for you. Now, some of the listeners of this show have been impressing the heck out of me lately with the updates on their life. I'd enjoy knowing how high your highs are right now or how low the lows are, maybe via an email to joel@valueofsimple.com or my Twitter handle at Joel Zeslavsky. If you're having a rough day or are having a challenging stretch, though, just know that there are people out there like me waiting and wanting to help you. High or low, I have your daily dose of encouragement, financial savviness, and simplicity in a moment. But first, I was thinking about what I wanted to update you on before I get into the episode with Ryan Avery, the 2012 world champion of public speaking, and I couldn't think of much. I mean, yeah, I could blab on about the feedback that I've been getting from my latest spreadsheet spotlight about how to name your baby, or heck, anyone's baby. I could tell you about the progress I'm making on my book on experience curating, or that I've started on my unsexy system sessions again. But I mean, I can mention my awesome now 6-week-old son Clark and all the reasons I love him, but I'm going to skip all that jibber jabber this time. Instead, here's an overview of the awesomeness Ryan and I have for you in this episode. First, we're going to explain the benefits of showering your kids with love instead of money. Then, we're going to talk about the 4 pillars to living your core values, even when you have less than $100 in the bank and just got fired from your job. You'll also hear about how Ryan gives 10% of his lifestyle away and why you don't need $1 million to have $1 million life. So if you're ready to listen to a couple of dudes that graduated from the school of hug first, ask questions later, I assure you that you are in for a treat. Here we go. Greetings and salutations to you, friend. I'm pumped up for another episode of the Smart and Simple Matters show, and I bet you are too. I am particularly jazzed right now because Ryan Avery is honoring me with a chat today. Ryan burst into the public's consciousness in 2012 when he became the youngest world champion of public speaking ever, as he bested more than 30,000 people from 116 countries. And at the time of publishing this episode, he is on a 50-city tour to train more than 5,000 people how to be better in business through public speaking. Ryan and I will also be unofficially and cordially, of course, racing each other to get a book published in the first months of 2014, but my money is on Ryan, since he's working with Jeremy Donovan, a dynamite guy and regular listener of this show, to crank out their book called Speaker, Leader, Champion, How to Advance in Your Career Through Public Speaking. Ryan's been featured on CNBC, Fox, and other prominent media outlets, but you can always catch him on his website, howtobeaspeaker.com. And one last random note, Ryan is also random, if not more random, if you can believe that, than I am, so I feel obligated to randomly say that he's been with his wife, Chelsea, for almost 7 years, he has no pets, and that he recently got scuba certified. How's that, Ryan? Welcome to the show.
Great introduction. Thanks so much.
All right. Well, let's start the folks who are listening off with what I call the seeds of awesomeness.
Okay.
Basically, what makes you, you? Helping us understand what makes you tick and how some of the experiences of your youth made you into the man that you are today. Now, I understand that you grew up in Texas, not that that's relevant, but maybe you can tell us one or two experiences or something about your environment growing up that is foundational to who you are right now.
I would say first that I had a strong family. My mom and dad they didn't have the strongest family growing up. My mom was dirt poor, eating mayo sandwiches, and my dad's dad was not the best man. And I remember my parents saying to me when they were younger, they always knew that when they had a family, they were going to show them love. And they were going to spoil their kids with love and not money. And my parents are very successful, but I remember being the normal teenager or being like 16 years old and thinking, okay, great, I'm going to get my parents to buy me a car. And my parents said, you can buy your own car. And in high school, all of the kids got their cars pretty much paid for by their parents. And my parents could have afforded it, but I think what they did really well was spoiled me with love versus money. So it helped me think more entrepreneurial because I had to think of how to make money and how to play sports and how to be involved in high school still. And I remember paying for my first car in cash because I worked really hard one summer. And I would say that my parents, we would eat dinner together every night at the dinner table. And I think one of my core values, my core value is family and relationships with them. So I would say that. I would also say my small town, southern roots of Humble, Texas. I live and grew up in Humble, Texas. We don't pronounce the H, so we know if you're foreign or not. Mm-hmm. So just having that small town feel where you kind of knew everybody and you said, yes, ma'am, you said, no, sir. You opened the car door for women and, you know, just the southern gentleman kind of feel, I would say. So small town and my family.
Well, that had to be a bit challenging, though, in terms of I've the same way. My parents showered me with love. But mm-hmm. I have to admit, I was pretty fortunate. My parents showered me with some money as well.
Nice.
But in your case, with all of your friends getting cars and all the other things, how did that impact you? Did you grow up with some kind of a challenge or a struggle that continues to this day? Or were you able to overcome that gap in terms of what other people got and what you got?
I think it was to my benefit. I was the first person to go to college in my family, and I grew up seeing my parents work really hard but also be successful and enjoy the money that they earned. So I would say that it was good for me because when I was 13 or 14 years old and seeing my parents work, I started to understand and realize, wow, you could make your own money. You can do your own thing and be successful. And I remember needing a car. And I worked hard that summer to raise money for it. But then I also started selling candy at school. And here and there, I started selling candy, and it grew and it grew and it grew. And I started making a lot of money. One day, I made $100 selling candy.
Whoa.
And I got in trouble. Obviously, you can't sell candy at the at school. And I approached my principal. I said, well, why can't you sell candy? I see people in band and in football, they sell candy for fundraising opportunities. So my principal said, well, yeah, that's for a fundraiser. I said to my principal, you're saying I'm allowed to sell candy if it's a fundraiser? And they said, absolutely. So I was on the swim team in high school, and I approached my coach and I said, coach, I own a business. I'd like to sell candy and give you 10% of the profits, so it's a fundraiser to the swim team. And I drew up a contract. I had him sign it. I showed it to my principal, and she said, touche. And I started selling candy for the next 3 years, and I was growing so much that I had vending machines around town. I had concession stands during the summer. So what that did and what that allowed me to do is just think creatively and think outside the box and kind of question the status quo and question, why do we have to do it that way?
That is pretty fantastic. I definitely would have been one of your customers back in the high school days. I try to avoid the sweet stuff now, and the sugar dragon is something that is hard for me to tame, but I would have been in your target audience, and that's really cool. Well, yeah. Hey, I want to get into it a little bit, because okay. You have, like I said, you're, at least as far as the public is concerned, you're a bit of a new guy on the scene, kind of like me. You know, I haven't been around too much. I haven't been floating in people's brains for all that long a period of time, but you recently published a blog post mm-hmm. on your website. It was called How to Live a Good Life. Mm-hmm. And I really dig it. I'm even going to link to it in the show notes for people to check out. And in that post, you posed this question. And you said, how do you live a good life when at age 23, you have less than $100 to your name, are a few days away from needing food aid, and face moving back in with your parents to save money? Now, I know you said you did really well with candy sales. I know you said that money has fluctuated up and down in the course of your life, but what did you learn at that point in time at age 23 about simplifying your life or about being money-wise during that rough stretch?
I was 23 years old. I just got married. The day after I got married, I got laid off. They didn't want to fire me on my wedding day, which was so nice of them. Next day I got laid off and I had started working just random embarrassing jobs. I mean, I would dress up as Lord Voldemort for Harry Potter premieres to earn $20. I would do coffee demos for companies. I literally had four random jobs pretty much at all times to make money. And I realized I didn't want to be like that, and I didn't want to have that for the rest of my life. So there was a time when Chelsea and I were in our apartment, and we were just broke. We had watered down all of our soap. We had no money. Literally, we had less than $100. I think it was like $84. And we said, okay, what are the things that we need to do in order to be successful or to live a good life? So regardless of how much money we're bringing in, regardless of what we're doing, what is it that we need to live our good life? And that's where we set up what we call our four pillars. And we said that we obviously need to live healthy, and we need to give 10% to good causes. So we want to make sure that we're constantly giving. Our belief is when you give more, you get more. And we want to save for tomorrow. And we also want to travel. So that's, for us, we identified what's living a good life: saving, traveling, living healthy, and giving. And I remember it was $84. I remember now, because once we made that up, we said, okay, well, let's think of a percentage rather than an amount. That way, no matter how poor or rich we are, we're always staying true to our core values. So we set up the percentages, and we give 10%. We save 10% for our travel, and then we save 25% of our income, and then we live off of 55. So we took that $84 and we broke it up, and we set aside $8.40 to give away. And I remember having the conversation, and Chelsea was saying, babe, we can't do this. We only have $84. We can't give. And I said, if we don't do this right now, if we don't give this $8.40, we will never do it. So if we can live off of 90% of what we make, we'll be able to give for the rest of our lives. And she agreed, and we decided to set that aside. And a couple days later, I got a call from Nike, and they offered me a job. I told them my situation. They paid me in advance so I could pay rent and everything. And I started to work with them, and kind of just grew from there the past 3 years.
So the call from Nike was the start of your turnaround, at least from a financial perspective. But it sounds like much more than a financial perspective. You have this mindset. You talked about live, give, save, and travel. Mm-hmm. And 45% of your income that you make, both you and Chelsea, goes to that. I'm kind of curious, though, because I love those four pillars, and I share some of them as well, especially give. Travel, I haven't been able to do so much. That's what happens when you have kids, and another one is almost here as we talk, by the time this is published, I'm sure I'll have son number two. I'm kind of curious, though, because you're so disciplined in allocating these percentages. What's important to you to spend the rest on? Where do your values lie when it comes to the other 55%?
Well, what we decided, and why we decided that too, is we caught ourselves getting in arguments that would escalate, where I would debate with her of, why do you need a new puzzle? And she would say, why do you need a new sweater? I buy way more clothes than she does. And we would find ourselves literally getting upset at each other for irrational things, or we would question each other on our spending habits. And we know from past experience from different family members or friends that one of the leading causes to divorce is money problems. Mm-hmm. And we committed to ourselves that we didn't want to have that. So that was really the main thing of why we wanted to commit to these percentages. So no matter what, our main core values were taken care of. And there were several months where we wouldn't be able to go out to eat to a fancy restaurant, or we couldn't spend money on a nice outfit or clothes, but our core values were taken care of, so we felt satisfied. We felt accomplished. We felt successful. And part of my feeling is you have to feel that in order to be that. And until you get in that mindset, it's hard to justify spending on other things. What we buy, I really truthfully don't buy much out of that 45%. I'd probably say clothes is my biggest one. I really like to look sharp. I enjoy tailored clothes. I enjoy just looking good. And I think clothes make you feel good. I probably spent a little too much money last month on clothes, but my other core values were taken care of. So what's cool about it too is it eliminates the guilt. So in the past 3 years, I haven't looked at my bank account, or probably I have maybe once or twice, maybe three times. And Chelsea and I literally feel zero guilt about what we purchase because, again, our core values are taken care of. We give, we save, we travel. So if we go and spend $500 on clothes, it's fine. Our future is being added to. We're traveling. I'm going to Russia tomorrow. We give back to the causes that we care about. So it kind of eliminates guilt, and it eliminates questioning the other person. So I never have to question Chelsea on her purchase again, or she doesn't have to question me on mine. And it's a wonderful system. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious because you said that you did question each other as recently as a couple years ago. Then you also said that you've looked at your bank balance maybe once or twice over the past 3 years. So with the exception of you coming home from shopping and having a new sweater in a bag, did you use some kind of a tool for budgeting, whether it was an unofficial system with paper receipts, or do you use something for income and expense tracking, or you don't even worry about that kind of stuff?
I kind of don't. What we did at the beginning, because I can show you, we literally budgeted every single dollar on paper, and we put it on our refrigerator. So you can see, like, we spent groceries today at $89. I had to get a shirt dry cleaned for $1.39. But what I did is we decided to set up four different bank accounts. So I have four different debit cards, and when I get paid, when I used to work for Special Olympics, it just automatically went into those four accounts. So I had a savings account that had 25% of my money go into travel, go into 10%, savings into 10. So really, all I ever did was look at my everyday account occasionally. And the travel, I mean, you kind of just know. So, wow, I'm putting $500 a month away for travel, and I haven't gone on a trip in 6 months. So I've got $3,000 to go to a fun place. Let's hop to the Bahamas, or let's go to Victoria in Canada. So it was kind of a system that worked really well for me. What I'd recommend is just setting up four different bank accounts where your money can automatically go into and base it off of a percentage. I remember in college hearing people say, man, I can't wait to be able to be a millionaire so I can give money. And I remember thinking, God, I don't want to be a millionaire till I give. So that's kind of the reason why we decided a percentage versus an amount, because no matter how much you're making, if you're giving 10% of your lifestyle away, then I feel like that's a major contribution. The average American only donates 2% of their income to good causes a year. So think about how good our world would be if you gave 10.
Absolutely. That you're talking about needing $1 million. And I've heard you say before that you don't need $1 million to live $1 million lifestyle. And just talking right now, I'm starting to get a sense of that. But can you elaborate on that a little bit more? What do you mean that you don't need $1 million to live $1 million lifestyle?
You don't need $1 million to live $1 million lifestyle. I feel like I live $1 million lifestyle. And a year ago, I lived off of less than six figures. I lived off of less than $75,000, both of us combined. And we have been to Egypt and Dubai. We travel all over the world. We eat at fancy restaurants. We're debt free. I have more money in the bank than most Americans will when they retire, because I've just been able to manage our money, Chelsea and I, not me. I shouldn't just say I've been able to. Chelsea and I as a partnership. Chelsea and I are partners. So I don't handle the money. We handle the money. We decide what we want to do with our lives, or we decide the vacations that we want to go on. I don't. I want to make sure that that's clear. So what I think is important is to identify your four core values or your four things that you want to spend money on. And if you're in debt, one of your things or one of your core values should be paying off that debt. So put 10 to 25% off of paying that debt, and eventually you're going to start living a lifestyle where you're loving it. Literally, if you do a budget of what you really need, you don't need that much in America.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? In terms of what we need. And that's right. One of the I've struggled there in terms of defining my needs versus my wants versus my desires, because one person's need is another person's desire, depending on how you were raised, what kind of culture you live in currently, exactly. What the other people around you look like, and whether you feel the urge to constantly compare yourself to all of the other wonderful things that people have. I mean, that's the really tricky part too. And I doubt that there's significance to that number four when you talk about four pillars. Maybe it could be someone's seven pillars or 10 pillars or even two pillars, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I like four because it's strong. It's what a chair is. You know, that's the pillars of a building. I feel comfortable with the pillar. When I teach clients, when I teach people how to set these up, absolutely. There are people who have three or there are people who have five. But you have to set what your needs are. For example, I don't want to one day be successful or feel accomplished. I want to constantly feel successful and I want to constantly feel accomplished. So in order to do that, I had to focus on my needs. And I did that by saying, if I'm giving, if I'm saving, if I'm traveling, and if I'm living a healthy life, I'm fine. I'm good. I don't need clothes. I don't need fancy restaurants. I don't need scuba certifications, that's all fun stuff. But I do need for me to feel satisfied to travel, to give, to save, and to live. Yours could be different. Yours could be you have to have clothes. And it's not about judging each other on what our needs are. It's about identifying them, setting them up, and staying true to those needs in your life.
And a constant communication back and forth. Because exactly. You talk about teaching people, and it sounds like you actively teach people how to set up these pillars in their life. So for someone who's listening right now, who's never done that, or who would like to revise what it is that they need, and then communicate that, work with their partner, work with their family, how would you start a conversation to do that?
How would you start a conversation with me, or how would you start a conversation with your partner?
Yeah, how would you start a conversation with your partner or your family to say, these are our family's needs. These are our family's goals. We will pursue them, perhaps at the intentional disregard of everything else that may or may not bring us fun, joy, happiness. But these are the important things. How do you start that conversation?
I think first you both have to be on the same page, and you have to approach the other partner in a time when, you remember, timing is everything. So if they're stressed after work or if they're not morning people, you have to make sure it's the right time to approach them on this and to give them warning to say, hey, look, I'm looking into different ways of how we can save more. I'm looking at different ways of how we can manage our money better. And then start saying, why don't we sit down for 1 hour? And this is what I recommend. Sit down for 1 hour with your partner. Take a piece of paper out, not a computer. Take a real piece of paper out. I say don't take a computer because we get distracted and emails pop up and social media things buzz all over our computer. Take a piece of paper, sit in a room quietly, and write down everything you want. Everything. I mean, if it's clothes, if it's diamonds, if it's straight teeth, if it's alcohol, I mean, write down every single thing you want. And then see what your partner and you have in common. Circle those things that y'all have in common, and then go from there and identify the top 10 things you want. And you'll start to see and you'll start to notice, okay, there's a trend here. Maybe two or three things are really the same thing, like clothes and purses and diamonds, right? So maybe you need to have a category where you have material expenses. And you sit down with your partner and you set up a system that works for you both. So if that means one person's getting paid and the other person's a stay-at-home parent, you figure out, okay, this is my belief. I don't think one person should know about the money in a partnership or in a marriage. I think both people should know. Whether one person is getting paid or both people are getting paid. I think it should be open and you should talk about it and you should share it. I know people disagree with me on that, but that's just my personal belief. And you should set it up where you set up four bank accounts and you transfer that money automatically. You talk to your employer. They have a form where you can fill out, most likely, that if you're doing automatic deposits, they can put a percentage of that automatic deposit into those different accounts automatically for you.
Right. I think the technique is probably not the important thing in terms of, although having separate accounts helps us mentally structure things into buckets where we know this bucket is for this thing, this bucket is for that thing. And I'm totally on board with you. Melinda, my wife, she and I, on the third Saturday of every month for an hour, we sit down at a computer. We don't have a piece of paper, although we're not having any social media notifications or phones buzzing while we're doing it. And we review our finances. For the previous month, we review what's important to us coming up, what we feel like we need to spend, and make sure that our annual budgeting is not trending into over-budgeting. So I agree. It's really important to have that constant communication with your partner, with your family. And what you were describing in terms of sitting down and writing a list on paper of everything kind of reminds me of something my friend Courtney Carver, she has a website called Be More With Less, and she has something she calls a simplicity summit. I'm going to link to it in the show notes for people who are curious. But I think the combination of a monthly financial sit down or every 2 weeks or every other month, the frequency isn't as important as the fact that it's scheduled and that it's constant and that everybody in the relationship or in your house understands what's going on. Because I couldn't imagine being the only one who knew what was going on with the finances. It's important to me that Melinda knows where the money is, how it's being spent, and everything that follows from that. So totally on board with
you. Yeah, I think that's a great point. And when I look back and think about it, Chelsea and I used to do that, and we still do. But we used to do it a lot more when we were kind of unbalanced. Of we would sit down every week and we would look at what we were spending our money on and how we could take a Starbucks that we were spending $4 on and make it really 60 cents a cup by going to Craigslist, getting a coffee pot, and making homemade coffee at our place. You know, so I think that that's really important.
Yeah. Well, let's switch gears for a moment because I'm really interested to hear your insight on a particular question. Okay. And I might be doing a terrible job and be doing you a disservice. Tell me if I am, of course.
Okay.
But if I can take a stab at summarizing how you help people with one word based on what I know about you, I guess that word would be communication. So communication with yourself, communication with your family, your coworkers, your partner, I guess anyone really. But what I'm really interested to hear from you is why you feel that all of these great things originate from great communication skills.
Well, I think the reason why we need to improve our communication skills is because we get in fights, we get in arguments, things negatively affect us because our communication styles conflict with one another. One of my favorite quotes that I still live by to this is from Stephen Covey, and it's, "First seek to understand before being understood." And if the world lived by that, I think we would have a much stronger world where we had more people who were accepting and able to have better conversations. But typically, when I coach people or when I'm going into businesses and consulting with them, it comes down to a misunderstanding. And when you think about it, we had training on how to do algebra. We had training on how to do a science or learn about scientific techniques in school, but we never had a class that taught us how to communicate with different styles and different people and different cultures. And communication is the way that we share stories, is the way that we sell and do business. It's the way that we have a relationship. Whether you might be communicating it too much or you might not be communicating enough in a partnership that I love you. For example, Chelsea and I, when we went to therapy for couples therapy, which I highly recommend, even if you're not struggling, I think it's wonderful. We found out that I was expressing stuff too much and it was kind of diluting the message of I love you because that's the family that I come from, is I say I love you all the time, and I hug and I touch, where she comes as more sometimes reserved family, where she says it and she means it, and she, you know, she'll say it often, but it'll be meaningful. So I think communication, and that's why I love it, and I could talk about this for hours, is so important to learn how to seek to understand before being understood, and to communicate not the way that you like to, but the way that the people who are listening to you, whether it's one person or 1,000 people in an audience, like to be communicated to.
There's a couple of interesting things that you just said. Okay. One of them is people don't get a class on how to understand other people. I guess right. I'm the exception, but I was a communications major in college.
Right.
And I remember Professor Mortensen, my junior year, we had a class about misunderstanding and miscommunication.
Right.
And even for somebody like me, who had a semester-long class from an amazing professor mm-hmm. on this topic, I still suck at it a lot of the time, and I constantly need to work on getting better. So even people who actually do have a class, which you're right, we are in the very, very small minority, still need to constantly work in this kind of stuff. And the other thing you talked about was saying I love you, or certain things that are really meaningful to you that yeah. might lose their relevance based on the frequency or the way that you say them to other people. Because, you know, I'm the kind of crazy dude who I had a blog post on Value of Simple a couple of months ago called Lead With I Love You, where I challenged people, instead of just saying I love you at the end of a conversation where you part ways, I proposed that people open with I love you, whether you do that instead of saying hi, or you say hi, I love you. If whatever it is the most important thing that you have to communicate to somebody when you get together, whether that's I love you or, you know, here's my big news, lead with that.
I like that. I think one of the problems that we have in the United States or with the English language is there's not another word for love, whereas in there are for other languages. So we typically hear, man, I loved that meal, or I love that movie, or I love that desk. Oh, I love you too, babe. So subconsciously, you're collecting and communicating that the same thing that you're saying about I love this meal and I love this chair or these inanimate objects that don't have any meaning to it, I'm using the same descriptive word to say my feelings for you. So I think there's a real disservice in the English language where we haven't identified yet a specific word that means I love and am in love with you versus, wow, I really enjoy that.
Yeah, I would agree. And like you, I can talk about communication for hours, mm-hmm. and especially about how ridiculous the English language is. Mm. I tell you what, Ryan, if I didn't already know English, there's no way that I would want to learn it, because our language is crazy, man. Like, seriously crazy. And you're right. The words that we use have a lot of meaning, and they get misappropriated for all kinds of things. I'm guilty of it all the time, too. And I'm glad that you acknowledge your limitations as well. But the fact that your purpose is communication and helping other people communicate, I guess that's what you're going to be doing on this tour that you're going on, right?
Yeah, this tour is 50 cities across North America, and I am going to be teaching people how to advance in their career through public speaking, but more specifically on how to present or create a winning speech and presentation. So it's kind of just the outline and understanding of the techniques and strategies you need to implement when you're giving a speech or presentation at work.
Okay, as simple as that, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And then what I hope to do is build relationships with the people that I am communicating with and who are in the audience, so they can be part of the How to Be a Speaker Club at howtobeaspeaker.com, and they can learn how to advance in their career through communication and public speaking. There are literally so many different facets of communication, like you were mentioning: communication with yourself, communication with your partner, communication with your boss, communication with the community. And all of those take different skills. And if you really want to be a leader, if you really want to be successful, you have to understand and identify what it means to be a good, solid communicator. You're constantly working on that. I am, at least.
Yeah. Well, do you have one or two resources, books, videos, podcasts, blogs, you know, whatever it may happen to be, that are your go-to resources that you tell people about first when it comes to, other than talking to you, of course, how they can be better communicators?
I don't really talk to clients until they've read Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. Mm-hmm. That book has absolutely changed my life. And if they want to be a better speaker or better leader, they have to read that book. Not just skim through the pages. I'm talking sit down, take a month, put a highlighter to it, bend some corner of the pages, and read that book. It will absolutely 100% change your life. That's one of the things that I often think about is, man, I wish I would have met Stephen Covey. He's just a brilliant man, and that book is timeless. There are a lot of books out there that I recommend from Craig Valentine. One of my favorite authors is Seth Godin. Pick up anything from him, and it's gold in your hand. But definitely read Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yeah, it sounds like it's had a transformational impact on you. Which,
absolutely.
There's only a handful of books that I can think of that have had the same kind of impact on me, but none of them are about a specific discipline. And I found that it's kind of nuts where some books are written about business, like mm-hmm. Stephen Covey's book. It's right. The intended audience, at least originally, was business.
Right.
But it can also be applied to our personal life, to our spiritual life. And mm-hmm. I found the same thing too, where awesome books just transcend what it was they were originally written for and ripple into every single aspect of your life. And that is when you know that you've got a dynamite one on your hand that you want other people to read, that you're begging people to read. Please read this book. It's going to be awesome. It's going to change you.
Yeah, so that's
I totally
true.
Get where you come from there.
Yeah.
You know, I want to ask you a couple more questions and have a little bit of fun too, because you know, this is a show. We talk about serious things, but everything doesn't have to be serious. You mentioned that you're a hug first, ask questions later kind of guy.
Uh-huh.
And I am too. I have an appreciation for this hug first mentality. And I've noticed, maybe it's just because I do it and the things you do, you tend to notice more. There's mm-hmm. other people, whether they're in the simplicity or minimalist movement, like Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus of TheMinimalist.com. Why to you, though, is greeting people with a hug or parting ways with a squeeze, why is that important?
I think in today's day and age, we don't really connect on a personal level. We are connected to our computers and our phones and technology, but I am a firm believer, and it goes back to my Southern roots, that the human touch and being able to connect on a personal level means so much. And there are things that you can't explain with words. So I feel sometimes you just need a hug, even if you're having a good day or bad day. And I think being able to express that and express a, you know, an appropriate hug where you just kind of just embrace in one another and just say, hey man, I'm thinking of you, or hey, I hope you're having a great day. It goes a lot farther than sending a text. It's kind of like a handwritten letter. Those will never go out of style. The handwritten letter will always trump an email or a text message or whatever the new technology is, because it has that personal connection. And we are humans. We are animals. We understand without words. We can relate to someone just by the way that their facial expressions are or their body language is. And a hug is just this universal acceptance of, hey, I'm here for you. I'm human. I know how you're understanding too, what you're going through.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I need to remind myself of this. You know, I'm constantly pushing to move more of my existence online and digital. Mm-hmm. Part of that has to do with the fact that I like kind of a minimalist space in which I live in, but there is something to that handwritten note that you get in the mail or that hug, you know, the things that impact you the most, at least on a personal level, on that deep level, are the things that you can normally see and touch and experience at that tangible physical level. And I need to remind myself and be better at making sure that, kind of like what you were saying with communication, is just because I love the digital landscape doesn't mean that everybody else wants me to interact with them in that way, and that I should, although I give plenty of hugs when I have the opportunity. There's no such thing as the virtual equivalent of a hug. I can't send somebody an emoticon with a smiley face and have them be like, oh, Joel's giving me a virtual hug. Awesome.
I like that.
So I totally get what you're saying there. Well, I do want to give you an opportunity. We covered a lot of ground on a lot of different topics, but is there something that we did not talk about that you would like people to know?
I would just really like to see more people set up those four pillars in their life. And one thing, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this.
Say it and I'll tell you later.
Okay, okay. One thing, I am all for marriage. I love marriage. I think it's a wonderful thing. Whether you're two males getting married, two women, a male and a female, I just want to say don't get into a relationship or don't get married, I should say, unless you really want to. Date, be in a 35-year commitment. That's fine. But marriage is, I want my generation to understand that marriage is something special and it shouldn't just be wasted. And it has nothing to do with the religious belief. It's just so powerful when you find somebody that you truly love and you want to grow with. Marriage is hard work. It is tough. I was listening to a group of girls a couple months ago and I overheard one of them and they said, man, he would be a great first husband.
Really?
And it just disgusted me to think about that. And I think we're fighting the wrong fight with the with gay rights or with human rights. I think that's fine. Let two guys get married. Let two females get married. What we should really be arguing about is teaching people how to communicate in a marriage and teaching people how to make marriage work and focusing on the beautiful aspects of being with a partner. So I know that's way off topic and random, but that's just something I am so passionate about and believe in, that if you want to get in a marriage, do it, but do it for the right reasons. Understand it's hard work and communicate with your partner, because if you seek to understand before being understood, 90% of your problems will be evaporated, because generally it's just a misunderstanding.
Yeah. Don't worry, we're keeping that one in. Okay. And that's the beauty of the question of what else would you like people to know? You can take that anywhere you like.
Yeah.
But I do want people to know one more thing. Where can they find you online if they like what they hear and they want to learn more?
Yeah, you can find us online at howtobeaspeaker.com. You can shoot me an email at ryan@howtobeaspeaker.com. And yeah, if you're in any of the 50 cities that I'm coming to in North America in the next 6 months, go to howtobeaspeaker.com/tickets. First 150 people registered per location are free. So I really hope I can see you. Tell them or come up to me and tell me that you heard this interview. I'd love to know where you heard me from and came about to the workshop. But yeah, stay in touch. Absolutely.
Cool. Well, I'll have links to all of the things you said and Facebook and Twitter for people who want to connect with you. They can go to the show notes. I will make it incredibly easy on them to figure out where you're going to be, how to interact with you. And I just want to say, Ryan, this has been a treat. I really appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been a wonderful time. I love having conversations and getting more into depth of how we can improve our communication skills. So thank you very much.
Hey, friend. It's just me again. Man, that was a heck of an episode, wasn't it? The story of how Ryan bounced back from being fired the day after his wedding with less than $100 in the bank made me want to jump for joy. What a resilient dude. Wow. Show Ryan that you think he's great as well by visiting his website, howtobeaspeaker.com, or catching him on Twitter at @howtobeaspeaker. Easy peasy, eh? You can get a hold of all the great articles, books, and other resources we discussed in the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM034. The articles I linked to in the show notes this time will really knock your socks off. And if you aren't wearing socks, check them out anyway. valueofsimple.com/SASM034, and you're all set. Now, here's a part of the show where I normally implore you to do something important, like leave a review on iTunes, or join the Refuge of Simplicity, or rock the bejesus out of your systems by taking one of my unsexy system sessions. You get the point, right? Instead, I want you to show the other podcasters that you dig some love. The 9th Annual Podcast Award voting is going on this month, November 2013, and some amazing podcasters are up for some awards. Go to podcastawards.com and check out the slate to see if your favorite podcasters need your vote. I will be voting daily for my friends Dan and Vanessa Hayes of their show Simple Life Together in the People's Choice and Education categories. I'll also be voting for my man Pat Flynn's Smart Passive Income podcast in the Business category. It's the first podcast I ever listened to and got me so excited to start my own show. Whether you dig comedy shows or sports, travel, technology, video games, whatever, go to podcastawards.com and see if you can help a show that you like. Okay, one last note though. I love hearing from you. Like, seriously, seriously love hearing from you. So please contact me anywhere I hang out online about just about anything you like. What Smart and Simple Matters means to you, how you're feeling, what you're doing, the most amazing resource of all time that I need to know about, whatever you got, I bet I'm interested in it. The email is joel@valueofsimple.com, and my social media links are at the bottom of any page on Value of Simple. Maybe I'll even feature your words at the top of a future show. So let me know what is on your mind. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you. And despite this phrase going out of fashion a long time ago, pretty much like everything else I say, go on with your bad self. Yes, I said it. I know. I'm a square. It's now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of all things Value of Simple.